From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, it's an interesting time to be in Sitka as the North Pacific Council gets set to vote on Bering Sea halibut bycatch reductions. Meanwhile, the state of Alaska is fixing to shut down if the legislature can't agree on a budget. We'll find out what that means for fish and game and our commercial fisheries. And have you seen that same skiff over in King Cove that looks like a spaceship?
Man, I thought that was a funny-looking skiff, but holy that thing goes.
All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvests for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Of the 30 million pounds of halibut caught last year by commercial fishermen statewide, nearly a third was thrown back into the ocean dead. They were netted accidentally by boats targeting other fish. Now, that may change. The North Pacific Fishery Management Council, which oversees the federal waters off Alaska, is considering major new limits on bycatch halibut at its meeting in Sitka this week. As KCAW's Rachel Waldholtz reports, the decision will have impacts from southeast to the Bering Sea and beyond.
Critics argue that too many fish are dying in the nets of big Bering Sea trawlers, and that means less halibut for everyone else.
Halibut's one of the two most important species, along with salmon, to the coastal communities of Alaska. The bycatch threatens all of that.
That's Linda Benkin. She's the head of ALFA, the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association, which represents mostly small boat commercial fishermen. She calls the Bering Sea Alaska's nursery ground for halibut. Studies have found that young fish migrate from there into the Gulf of Alaska and southeast. Trawlers targeting flatfish like yellowfin sole drag their nets through the same deep water habitat where halibut live and invariably catch some. The law requires trawlers to discard that halibut, but most fish don't make it back into the water alive. Last year alone, trawlers scooped up and discarded about 5 million pounds of halibut in the Bering Sea. This has been the case as long as there's been trawling, but the issue has become more urgent in recent years as halibut abundance has dropped. In the last 10 years, the exploitable biomass has declined by half, and halibut fishermen have seen their catch limits drop with it. But the caps on bycatch have remained essentially the same. In the central Bering Sea, halibut fishermen initially faced a 60% cut this year, an outcome avoided only on the condition that bycatch in the region decline. So ALFA has asked the council to reduce the trawl bycatch cap by 50%.
Yeah, a 50% bycatch reduction would be absolutely devastating to the Amendment 80 sector.
Chris Woodley is head of the Groundfish Forum, which represents most of what's called the Amendment 80 fleet. That fleet is made up of six companies, most based in Seattle, with about 18 catcher processors targeting flatfish in the Bering Sea.
Essentially, our boats would be tying up 5 to 6 months early, and it would also have significant downstream impacts to the maritime economies of remote communities in Alaska, primarily Unalaska, ADAC, Kodiak, and Sandpoint.
Woodley says the fleet has already made voluntary efforts to reduce bycatch, and they're asking the council to let them adopt other measures, like deck sorting, which would allow them to return more halibut to the water alive.
There may be some things, more things that we can do, but all of that comes at a cost. And we're concerned that people don't appreciate, you know, that we've already been making, have already made significant improvements, and it's not so simple as just flipping a switch and everything gets better.
For Benkin, the big issue is what kind of fisheries Alaska wants. The commercial halibut fleet is made up of about 1,000 small boats, most of them family-owned.
I would say the way fisheries are changing, there's definitely, it's the way our country is changing. It's what farmers, small farmers have faced. It's the industrialization of the food system. To me, this decision the council's facing, it's really a landmark decision. They are deciding between a fishery that has a 100-year tradition being commercially exploited by small boats, community-based. This is a really important fishery to Alaska. And this fish being taken as bycatch, wasted in the industrial Seattle-based fleet.
But whether the council sees it that way is up in the air. The council is expected to vote on bycatch caps this weekend. In Sitka, I'm Rachel Waldholz.
If you're lucky enough to find yourself in lovely Sitka, the council is meeting in Harrigan Centennial Hall through next Tuesday. If you're elsewhere, follow Rachel's stories at kcaw.org. When the council does make its final decision on halibut bycatch, two of its members from Alaska will not be allowed to vote. NOAA General Counsel for Alaska, Lawrence Smoker, found that David Long and Simon Kinneen had a financial conflict of interest in the outcome of the vote and ruled that they must be recused from the halibut bycatch vote. The decision was appealed, but the ruling was upheld by NOAA's Deputy General Counsel, Mary Beth Ward, in Washington, D.C. Long works as a captain for Glacier Fish Company, but mostly targets pollock, while Kinneen works for the Norton Sound Economic Development Corporation, which is one of six Bering Sea CDQ groups that collectively receive 10% of the Bering Sea harvest quota. And even though the decision before the council is for the flatfish catcher processor bycatch, Ward agreed that the rule could be applied to more fisheries and that only certain ones are specifically excluded. In her letter, Ward said Long and Kinneen may participate in the halibut bycatch deliberations and may inform the remaining council members how they would have voted if given the chance. The ruling leaves Alaska with four votes on the matter. Washington has three, Oregon has one. The National Marine Fisheries Service Alaska region will be represented in the vote by Assistant Administrator Glenn Martin because Regional Chief Jim Balsinger must be recused as well because his wife lobbies for the St. Paul CDQ group.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
With a partial government shutdown looming, state agencies are making plans for what services might be reduced without a budget deal by July 1st. But salmon don't care about budgets and money. The fish are coming to Alaska waters, whether or not the Department of Fish and Game will have its usual resources to manage them. Margaret Friedenauer in Haines reports.
Commercial fishermen in Haines are readying their gillnet boats for the upcoming salmon season. They have about 3 weeks before their first opener in the Lynn Canal. That's about the same amount of time legislators have to approve a state operating budget before thousands of state employees face layoffs and many state departments face a partial shutdown. That includes the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. They count the fish and tell fishermen when and where they can operate.
Fishermen are ready. You know, everybody is just ready to go, and so we'll do our best to make sure they have that opportunity.
That's Jeff Regnart, director of the Division of Commercial Fisheries for Fish and Game. He says if a budget isn't passed by July 1st, ADF&G will have to operate with about 70% less money than usual. He says the department won't stop commercial fishing, but the management of those fisheries could be more conservative than usual. For example, the fleet could get less time to fish in a certain area. That's because survey and research programs might suffer and biologists won't have as much data to make management decisions.
You know, when we have less data, we get more conservative because we're going to err on the side of the fish. And so that's likely to happen if we're continuing to operate under this fiscal umbrella that we have. You know, we'll do our best to make sure that it doesn't impact things substantially. That's really the key for us, is to make sure we can maintain the escapement, maintain the priority uses, healthy fisheries. That's our hope.
By July 1st, several fisheries will be underway across the state. In Southeast, those include salmon purse seine, gillnet, and troll fisheries. But Regnart says ADF&G has its priorities. First is the conservation of fish stocks. Second to that is managing for subsistence use.
Commercial fishing follows that subsistence use as a priority, and so we'll do our best to make sure those fisheries have an opportunity to harvest salmon. We hope that they can harvest it close to what they would have if we would have been funded, you know, if it would have been a, quote, normal year.
Unlike a normal year, Regnart says most forecasts predict near record levels of salmon returns across the state. The threat of a government shutdown is not stopping the fleet in Haines from getting ready for business as usual. Fisherman Bill Thomas thinks a more conservatively managed fishery isn't a bad thing.
You know, we've fished 12-hour openings in the past to conserve for fish.
Thomas has firsthand experience with the legislature. He's a former state representative, and he says a month is still plenty of time to forge a budget deal.
I think they'll have a budget by then. I think, you know, what's the old saying? You have nothing to fear but fear itself. You know, we don't need to panic yet.
Instead of worrying about what could happen to state government, Thomas will spend those 3 weeks gearing up for salmon season. Reporting in Haines, I'm Margaret Friednauer.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by commercial fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
If you took part in the Area M salmon fishery last summer, you most likely saw a seine skiff that made you pause.
It does look different. Everyone that drives by it kind of looks at it and then turns back and looks at it again, and most people think it looks pretty ugly the first time they see it, but it looks like a little spaceship when it's out of the water.
That's Andrew Manos of Anchorage, skipper of the Cape St. Elias. He owns the skiff, built by Snow and Company Boat Builders of Seattle. He's in King Cove getting ready for the salmon season. The aluminum skiff is big, 24 feet long and 13 feet wide. Its most distinctive feature is that the back 10 feet is flat, with no sides or bulwarks, and it only sits a foot off the water. Builder Brett Snow explained that the trend has been for skiffs with higher and higher sides, forcing the tow post to be taller, creating less stability while towing a seine net out on a set.
The goal with this skiff was to get the tow point as low to the water as possible, which meant basically not having any bulwarks in the back part of the skiff, turning it more into what a traditional tugboat might look like.
Mano said the design worked just like it was drawn up.
When this skiff is towing and it's under a load, it sits a lot flatter in the water, so it doesn't kind of skip around. It, you know, mostly just tows straight forward, which gives it a lot of power.
Speaking of power, the skiff uses a ducted 40-inch prop or wheel and double rudders mounted amidships. And though its 300-horsepower engine is smaller than the 400 and 500-horsepower units in many new skiffs, Mano says it's got more than enough pull.
It actually takes a little bit of self-control on the skiff driver's part. We broke our lead line and our cork line last season.
Builder and owner both agree that the only two downsides to the skiff are its higher-than-average cost and, as Manos explains, its weight.
It's like another boat coming at you, you know. It's like a gill netter coming at you when you're closing up. You know, he gets pushed into the big boat or anything. It's a solid impact. There's dents on the big boat and there's dents on the skiff. Smashed the stern gate in pretty good, a couple of swells. And from that perspective, it's a little bit troublesome.
Snow said he'd love to build another skiff of the same tugboat design, but would work to lighten it up, make other changes based on lessons learned from the prototype. We've got a picture of the skiff at KMXT.org.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KCAW's Rachel Waldholtz in Sitka and KHNS's Margaret Friednauer in Haines. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.